This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, welcome along. You're listening to the William Hill Golf Podcast with Dave Kellner and Mike Grenham here to look ahead to two events in the golfing world this week. We've got the ISPS Hander Perth International on the European Tour and on the PGA Tour, the McGladrey Classic. But first, as ever, we will reflect on last week and three events to just have a little chat about in the aftermath of these three tournaments, starting with the match play won by the Flying Finn, Mikko Ilonen, winning the match play. What did you make to the events as a whole, Mr. Grenham?
Not entirely the most exciting event of all time. Some good players in it, but it didn't really catch the imagination that much, did it?
It just lasts too long, doesn't it?
I think so.
For 5 days, and the standard was very strong in the group stages, and it's an event that just seems to deteriorate in terms of quality as it goes on, which is not what you want from a tournament.
I think we've got a world match play in the Accenture one, yeah, that's really good, and I like that. Albeit, one of the weaknesses of match play, I think, is that, and maybe you're just alluding to that, is when it gets down to the final and there's only a couple of players playing, there's not a lot going on, is there? And I love the first day of the match play in America, where there's like 32 games, yep, on the first day. You know, there's so much going on and there's lots to think about. So it's maybe a little weakness of match play that, you know, when it's down to just two players and walking between, you know, and there's a playoff, the third and fourth playoff, no one ever cares about, or when they have those.
It was so strange on Sky, because Mikko Ilonen had just won the championship,
yeah,
and then they had to stay on air for an extra half hour watching them complete the third and fourth place playoff.
No one's interested other than the lads playing, are they, really? But, look, it was okay.
Yeah. In the Hong Kong Open, Scott Hend won. He beat Angelo Kay in a playoff. That event will obviously only be remembered for Wade Ormsby finishing above David Lipsky.
And winning you another free lunch, which we've had already today.
We have. It was delicious, actually. Yeah, thank you for that, Mr. Grenham. Scott Hend winning the Hong Kong Open, though. Not much to say about that event, really. Scott Hend, an experienced competitor. It wasn't an event that I think I saw the playoff and that was it, basically.
I watched every minute of it.
Can't imagine. In the States, Ben Martin won the Shriners. He was tough to find. No doubting his ability, but had finished second to last and last in his previous couple of starts on tour. Didn't have any form at the track either. In fact, he posted 78-79. The week before at the Fry's.
If he'd have been a horse, there'd have been a Stewart's Inquiry, wouldn't there?
Definitely, definitely.
There'd have been a Stewart's Inquiry, and we'd be getting the security department in to have a look at that. Upgrading form.
We had a few players in contention, Mike.
We did, didn't we?
Yeah, Martin Laird and Scott Piercy for you. Spencer Levine crept up with a 63 on Friday, but went cold with the putter over the weekend. So a little bit of enjoyment early on Sunday. But never quite materialised for those players.
Well, Piercy should probably have been placed. He bogeyed that par 5 near the end. If he'd have parred it, he'd have been placed, because he's only one shot off a place, actually. And what was he, 100 to 1, Piercy? I can't remember what he was. What was he?
80s, I think.
80, was it? He bogeyed it. And if he'd have birdied it, he'd have been even better. But that dreaded one shot off a place, hate that. Laird didn't play that particularly well over the weekend, and Levine was there or thereabouts, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Jonathan Birdie, who else a bit, was there or thereabouts for a little bit. Didn't have a great Sunday. But, yeah, ultimately it was a good win for Ben Martin, completely out of the blue.
Absolutely. And Kevin Streelman will finish with a late rattle. He can string some birdies together, can't he?
He can, yeah. That's becoming his trademark.
Let's have a look at this week then, Mike. We've got two events to get stuck into, starting off with the ISPS Hander Perth International. Charles Schwartzel heads the betting here, 10-1. Victor Dubuisson, 12-1. Danny Willett and Jason Duffner, both 16s. Jeff Ogilvie, 20-1. Eduardo Molinari, Marcus Fraser and Raphael Jacquelin, all 25s. And it's 33s and bigger the remainder. The tournament was first played back in October 2012. So this is the third renewal. And it attracts a relatively strong field for an event on the Australian tour, even though it is co-sanctioned, this one. That's largely because it's the tournament with the largest purse on the Australian tour, so lots of dollars up for grabs here. Bo Van Pelt beat Jason Duffner in the inaugural edition of the tournament back in 2012, and Jin Jong sprung a surprise at Lake Carignyup last year. It's a cracking golf course, this one, Mike, described by architect Mike Clayton as the hilliest of Australia's championship courses. Fairways are wide, but hitting the correct area of the fairway is key to attacking the hole. It's also a golf course that demands players to work the ball both ways and sometimes control ball flight under the wind as well. It's not a bad event, this one.
It's not a bad event, Dave, for an Australian Tour event. You look at the top of the market, it's very strong. You soon cascade down to fairly lower grade players, and that's—I don't mean to be disrespectful, but it's just ratings and rankings wise, that's a fact. Mm. It's quite a little bit top heavy, you could argue. So, it's good. Could we have a weekly feature, Mike Clayton's views on courses around the world?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. We'll get that sorted at some point in the in the future of the golf podcast. I think whenever I come to look at these Australian events, they are very top heavy, and they are usually or historically dominated by those towards the top of the betting as well. I always get the feeling that that the cream tends to rise to the top.
Not last year though.
No,
because he was 252-1, wasn't he, Young? But I had a good look at the tournament, and there are players that I could pick, but I have to say, Dave, it's a no bet at this stage for me.
Okay, I've got one selection here.
I'm not going mad on this one, then.
No, not going mad. I'm going with Richard Green as my one selection at 50-1, playing a point each way. He had a couple of starts here in the early noughties. This golf course hosted the Johnnie Walker Classic back in 2002 and 2003. He made both cuts without setting the place alight. Actually, in 2002, finished inside the top five in driving accuracy and greens in regulation, but putted absolutely abysmally. It's really a golf course, this one, Mike, that I think should suit Richard Green's game. He plots his way around golf courses and has had success in the wind in the past as well. Finished tied 18th at the Dunhill Links recently and 12th at the Omega European Masters. Both courses that demand, well, the European Masters in particular, demand good ball striking. Best finish this season as well came at the Open de España, where he finished second in that playoff. That was on the demanding PGA Catalunya track, where the wind does play a part as well. I expect him to go well here. Talented player, as I mentioned, top heavy field. He's the one that jumped out to me at 50-1, but not an event, as you mentioned, Mike, that I'm going crazy with this week.
No, but I can get all of that, Dave. He's a good pick there. He's been a little bit up and down, hasn't he? He's had good finishes in the Spurs with not so good. But yeah, he's definitely got that air of quality about him. We've got Jason Duffner's back, isn't he, this week?
Yeah, I think...
second here a couple of years ago.
He's mentioned with his neck injury that's kept him out for a while that he has come out in the press and said that he would be happy just to play 18 holes without any physical problems.
Way to go to play 18 holes.
Precisely. And when you think about a player at 16-1, you want a lot in your favour, don't you, from a betting standpoint?
We're backing him. Schwartz looks short to me as well, having backed him last time out where he played pretty appallingly. I wouldn't be jumping on him at 10-1. I know it's not a strong field, and at his best, he'd certainly probably win, but 10-1. Yeah, the top of the market, that's where I was struggling a little bit, you know. I do like Jeff Ogilvie back on home turf. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him play well. And the other guy that caught my eye, I guess, Peter Uihlein, but I don't know if this is his type of course.
Those guys at the top of the betting, I like Danny Willett most of all at 16-1, just in such consistent form at the moment. Third here last year on debut he's the one I'd go for at the top of the betting. Just a few other names that I just want to mention quickly before we move on. It wouldn't be a golf podcast without mentioning Eduardo Molinari. He's 25-1 in this field. He has been playing some good golf recently. I think this course will suit. Greg Chalmers is of definite interest at 50-1. I love him in these Australian events. He's got four wins on the Australian Tour, including that double back in 2011 where he won the Australian Open and the Australian PGA. 10th here in 2012. Maybe not quite playing quite as strongly as he has done in the past in the lead-up to this Australian swing. But I think he'll go well. And Mark Foster, another one that I can see going quite well. He's got a couple of top 15s on tour recently. But again, maybe have a look at this in play. Mm. And it's worth remembering as well, start time 11 p.m. this evening for the...
Wednesday, yeah, we're recording. Yeah. It's a little bit late on Wednesday, the 22nd, so yeah. Mm.
Yeah, so this is tonight, this one starts, 11 p.m, the Perth
UK
International.
Let's
move on then. Let's have a look at the McGladrey Classic, which from a betting perspective, certainly on this podcast, is the big event this week. And Matt Kuchar and Webb Simpson are 14-1 joint favourites here. Bill Haas and Chris Kirk, both 16-1. Zach Johnson, 20s. Harris English and Nick Watney, both 25s. Martin Laird, 28s. And it's 33s and bigger the remainder. And this is another event, Mike, where scoring will be low. But perhaps not quite the putting contest that last week's Shriners traditionally is.
No, but putting's important here, Dave, isn't it? I don't think the winning scores are quite as low, are they? They're more like 14, 15 under, but
yeah.
You certainly, I think putting's important here. It's, yeah, I do.
Yeah, the winning score has ranged from 14 under to 16 under in the years since the event's inception back in 2010. Mm. The event actually held slightly later in the schedule last year, beginning of November, returns to its regular October slot this time round, and Sea Island Resort Seaside Course in St. Simon's Island again in Georgia hosts the tournament. Short par 70, measures just 7,000 yards. It can be a test if the wind blows, but that's the only real defence to this golf course. Looking at the forecast, the weather looks settled.
Nice.
It looks like it's going to be pretty benign, so I expect it to be very low scoring. And we've traditionally seen plodders, in inverted commas,
ooh,
populate the leaderboard, Mike. Even though it's an exposed course, plodder, with wide fairways, they can look small from the tee, these fairways. Yeah, plodders. Plodders and Georgians have populated this this leaderboard
plodder
in the past.
Just because they don't whack it 400 yards, they're plodders, are they? Hmm.
Slightly disrespectful,
admittedly. Disrespectful, it is. Not slightly.
Slightly disrespectful.
Not slightly. Go on, anyway. So that's what you think, do you? You think,
yeah, I think
plodders, as you call them?
Okay, I think you can get away with a lack of length.
Oh, most definitely.
On this golf
most
course.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, the stats definitely tell you that. Although Tommy Gainey, who won, would hit it fairly well, wouldn't he? Hit it fair all the way. And Chris Kirk last year would hit it a bit further than the identikit winners. But I think what you say is absolutely correct, to be fair, other than the completely disrespectful plodder that you added to it. But I think your shorter players have a real chance here, which they don't always have.
No.
On some courses.
Absolutely. And you're looking at, you have in the past been looking at Georgia Tice, Scott Brown, Brian Harmon, Davis Love, Matt Kuchar, Heath Slocum, Chris Kirk, all with ties to the... Mm. It's a popular place for PGA pros to settle, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, no, absolutely is, isn't it? There's a load of them there, really, isn't there? That and kind of, is it Isleworth in Florida? There's a lot of them down there. And yeah, it is one of the hot spots for sure. And also quite a few are around Sawgrass, aren't they, as well?
Mm.
Is that near Isleworth? Probably
couple,
isn't
yeah,
it?
I think it's close. Couple of picks for me.
Three.
Okay, I'll let you tee
off. One of them isn't even in the betting, so I don't know what I'm going to do with that. So two, and we'll have to see what happens on number three, who I'll mention.
I'll make sure Mark had said.
I've asked him.
Have you asked him already?
I've emailed him. He's a late entry, this guy, to be fair. And
is it Roberto Castro?
No, it isn't Roberto Castro, no. You'll have to wait. I'm not giving it away until...
Okay.
He's not in the betting yet, I don't think. Shall I go first?
Yes, please do.
I've put Russell Henley as my headline pick in this event. He is a Georgian. He's not from Sea Island, but he is from the state. Couple of wins to his name now on tour. He won the Sony and won the Honda in the past couple of years. Very good putter when he's on. That wasn't reflected though in his play here last year, where he had a fairly moderate debut in the event. But he definitely finished the back end of last season, which seems so long ago, doesn't it, Dave? When was it? September? the back end of the 2014 season, and now we're in 2015, even though we're not. He was second in the Deutsche Bank, didn't play so well in the BMW, but 12th in the Tour Championship. So a really good end to the season, but ever so well in that Deutsche Bank, Henley. A good putter, top 30 for strokes game putting last year on tour. As I say, he's from Georgia. I'm expecting a much better effort from him in this year's event than last year's. I could see him going ever so well. He's a player I like a lot, and 40-1 seems very fair for him in this contest.
40-1, Russell Henley. Is he a headline pick then, Mike?
Yeah, yes, he is. He is. My other two guys are slightly speculative, so he would be a headline.
I'm going with Brendan Todd as my selection, as my headline pick here at 33-1. Saw a player with local connections possible last year in Chris Kirk, and hoping it could go to another Georgia College graduate in Todd this time round. Had a career year, without a doubt, in 2014. Win at the Byron Nelson, host of other top tens as well. Has experience on this golf course. Not sure how many times he's played it in the past, but I'd imagine quite a few because it's a popular venue for those in the area. And having missed the cut here in 2012 in tournament play, he improved to finish tied 16th last year. I think he needed the break at the end of last season because he'd been on the go playing week in, week out almost all season. Happy that he shut it down after the Tour Championship, closed with a 66 there. Should take advantage of the two par fives. I think you need to take advantage of those two par fives here. I understand that par four scoring important, but you've really got to get after those two par fives, and he plays the par fives brilliantly. Puts extremely well, Brendan Todd, and I can just see him contending on a course that should suit. So I'll go with Brendan Todd at 33s as my headline pick here.
Fair dues, Dave. He had a great season last year, didn't he? So first of my two guys is David Toms, who's an old favourite of the podcast. Toms has very good course form here, including a third and a second in the four outings that they've had at this course. He's a Louisianan, he's not a Georgian. In fact, both my final picks are Louisianan, not by design, admittedly. But having said that, it's not a part of the world that's a million miles from Georgia, so don't think that's any detriment. But yeah, third in 2010 and second in 2012. Missed a cut one of the four times they played here, but also 27th as well. So three out of the four outings, pretty decent.
Yeah.
Finished last season in interesting form. Nothing that would probably have the people running excitedly to back him at short odds, but Greenbrier, his last five outings, Greenbrier 26th, 13th in the John Deere, withdrew in the Barracuda. I'm not quite sure why he withdrew from that event. Wouldn't be right up his street, that event in Reno. And 18th at the Wyndham before disappointing slightly in the Barclays. But, yeah, a reasonably good end to the season. Was fifth at Colonial also. And I just think that this is a course that he really likes. Putting will be his Achilles heel potentially this week because he hasn't been putting that well over the last year or so by his high standards. But this course suits him. He's fifth on the strokes game putting stats for 2015. That is a complete red herring, though, I have to say, because he's only played two rounds where he missed the cut last week in the Shriners. So I'm not clinging to that, but at least maybe he's putting a little bit better. It could be completely misleading, that. But in any event, accurate off the tee, good greens regulation. If he puts decent, he loves the course. And I think he's 80-1, which just strikes me as he's a quality player.
Yeah, he is 80-1, David Toms. He's got form at other tracks that correlate well with this golf course as well. A real shot maker, isn't he, David Toms?
Yeah, he ended the season well there with, you call it, pretty much three top 25s from his last five events, you know, which was very encouraging.
I'm going with... I'm going to take a real flyer with my second and final pick here. I'm going with Ken Duke.
Whoa, we haven't been on the podcast for a while, have we?
A long time. 200-1. Unfortunately, he wasn't on the podcast when he won either, Ken Duke. Just having a small play on him, half a point each way. He might be worth a look in the top 10 and top 20 markets as well.
You've done that before, haven't you?
Ken Duke, definitely. He's done... very little. That was an emotional breakthrough win at the Travelers Championship because he'd been trying to win a PGA Tour event for such a long time. Got it in 2013. Golf course which suits his game, this one. 15th here in 2010 and 20th in 2012. And happy to see him put it back on the schedule this time round because he's played two and skipped two here at the McGladrey in the past. Has got some good finishes on courses that tend to correlate with this one. Played TPC Southwind well in the past. That's the host of the FedEx St Jude. Also played Harbourtown well in previous years. Ken Duke. It's a real long shot to suggest he's going to contend this week, but he drives the ball accurately, finds a lot of greens. He's distinctly average with the putter, in all honesty, so he's going to have to put better than he has done recently. But it's a course that he will like and does like, this Ken Duke. 200-1 is big, in my opinion, for a guy that drives the ball so well and strikes his iron so well. If he's ever going to contend again, Mike, it's going to be on a course like this, a short par 70.
Yeah, I get all of that, Dave. I mean, Tom's is a similar profile in a lot of ways. You need to putt well, but as we've kind of mentioned a lot of times, putting is the one thing that can come pretty quickly for these guys, isn't it? If they're hitting the ball badly off the tee, they don't tend to turn it on just out of the blue, do they?
I agree.
But putting, if they like the greens and they like the course, sometimes the play on the greens can just shoot up for 1 week where they're happy and where they're content. So, no, I get that. That's a big price. So you're going to go top 10 as well, are you?
I won't put up an official bet, but I will be having a look at... We've got top 10 finish prices up here.
I reckon. 20.
He's been top 20. His two starts here. So I'd I would like a look at top 20. You'd want 18, 20 to 1 for this. He's 18 to 1 to finish in the top 10.
That's all right.
That's not a bad bet. And I think top 20 prices should be up shortly, and when they are, I'll be looking at top 20 as well.
Okay. My final guy is a very, very, very speculative one. So speculative, he's not even in the betting at the moment. So I've had to ask Mark Adsed, who hasn't sent us any tips the last couple of weeks.
No,
he's getting lazy, isn't he?
We'll be on to him.
Well, I'm hoping that he'll send us through a price for Andrew Lupe, who is another Louisianan. First proper year on the US tour last year. Decent putter, top 25 for strokes gained putting in 2014, and top 30 for birdie average. He's a long hitter, Lupe. Is it Lupe or Loop?
I think it's Loop.
Is it Loop?
I think it's Loop. I'm not 100% on that, though.
Lupe, I don't know. Finished fourth in Texas. Wouldn't be entirely the same kind of test as this, but a little bit of wind about by any stretch of the imagination. It's similar in that regard. Some decent form on the web.com tour in this state of Georgia. It was fifth in the South Georgian Classic a couple of years ago. Ended the season reasonably, 57th at Barracuda and top 25 in the Wyndham. First run in 2015. He's a late entry. Someone pulled out, which is why he's not in the betting. I just have him in mind as someone who could just bob up at a big price somewhere. Mm. So he's a market at the moment, Dave. I had to look at other people's prices. About 250-1. So very, very speculative. That'd be a half a point each way job once we get the prices. And hopefully Mark won't put him in at 25s or something.
No, he does know that you fancy him now, though, unfortunately, doesn't he?
Probably reveal my hand.
Yes. So let's have a look. When this podcast is posted, hopefully he'll be in the betting by then. And
yes.
We'll have a look what price Andrew Loop is. Who came? I had loads on the shortlist, I must admit. Brian Harman, who's 40-1. He was so impressive in the John Deere, shot 22 under there. Faltered since then, but I think that's to be expected, to be honest, from a guy getting his first win. He went to Georgia University as well. Birdie machine, can flight his ball when it's windy. Shot maker, tied seventh at the Heritage at Harbour Town as well. So I think Brian Harman's interesting at 40s. I like Scott Langley at 50s. He's a new dad, which is interesting. 22nd on debut here last year. He also can flight his ball in the wind, and he's a shot maker. So both those guys, both left-handers, Langley and Harman. And Daniel Summerhayes,
he was on
who
my
always
mind,
interests me, at 80-1. 10th here last year, finds loads of fairways and greens, best on the golf course where length isn't necessarily a factor. But looking at his stats from his first two performances this season, doesn't seem to be striking the ball that well, which is a concern, and that's why I didn't include him at 80-1.
Of the outsiders, he was certainly one I looked at. And then two kind of grizzled veterans who don't hit it particularly long way, but do have some interest here. Trevor Immelman's another guy who I think's got into the field late in the day, and he's out in one of the early groups tomorrow, obviously the ex-Masters champion. He wasn't so far off, three shots behind Ben Crane in 2011, and he just always seems, he's a player I like, but he just doesn't seem to, he's not catching fire and really getting a good run of form ever. He flirts with, you think, he's coming back, and he never quite does it, in the last couple of years. So, but I'll be watching him closely because I say he's got a late entry, so hopefully he'll be motivated to do better than he did in 2011. If he did, he'd be delighted, I guess. Mark Wilson, this sort of course should suit him, but he's way out of form. And the only other person was probably, yeah, Summerhays is probably the other man, really, Dave. So, yeah, there's a few at the top of the market you could fancy, to be fair, isn't there?
There is. Matt Kuchar and Webb Simpson, 14-1 joints. Bill Haas and Chris Kirk, both 16-1. Are any of those four right at the top of the betting?
I think all of them have big chances, yeah. Don't they? Simpson's got a great record here. Yeah, Zach Johnson's from around this area. Harris English, he finished really well last weekend, but he's 25-1. I think he's been tipped up, hasn't he, elsewhere? So he's very short at that, I have to say. But yeah, Kirk won last year. Hard to defend, but a title, but he had a great end to the year.
A guy that's that looks too short to me from an outright betting perspective, but could be good in your prop markets, like your top 10, top 20 markets, Charles Howell. I know he's short at 40-1, and I know you don't like him, Mike, but...
I wouldn't say I don't like him.
No, I don't mean as a person. I'm sure he's fine as a person.
It's nice to animals and children.
Yeah, betting proposition, maybe not.
I hate him as a win bet.
Yeah, he's not won since 2007.
It's worse than Eduardo Molina.
You're going back 7 years now. he's got 14... This is a statistic from ESPN. 14, I think it's ESPN, it might be NBC, 14 top 10 finishes in his first five events the year since 2007, including three top tens last year. He's got a couple of top tens in his career starts here at Sea Island as well, so it wouldn't surprise me at all if he top 10 this week, but it'd surprise me massively if he won. So one of those sort
what
of
price
players.
Is he to win, Dave?
40-1 to win.
Yeah, but your problem then is that all your slower markets are based around that 4-1 top 10.
I don't think that's a bad bet.
Okay, no, he's
top 10.
Yeah, he's consistently does okay, doesn't he, without ever threatening to win these days. It's not that I don't like him, just for his ability, I just think he should have won more, and he just seems to float around the fringes, doesn't he?
One more name, just before we wrap up here, just to throw at you really quickly in the outright market. 100-1, Stuart Sink. I think
I honestly had him down there, look. I nearly mentioned him there a minute ago.
He's not got any course form.
That's why I didn't mention him.
Yeah, he's missed the cut twice, and I think 60-odd players finished the other time he played. But he was bang up there last week.
He had a strange
run, didn't he? And had a run early on.
Great first round, poor
early on
second
Friday,
round.
Where he I think he was five over through three holes or something like that, and then came back at the weekend, shot another good round on Sunday. Maybe another guy that doesn't win enough now, right now
not
on
anymore,
tour.
He doesn't.
But he's interesting because this golf course should suit him. I just wonder whether he's strong enough off the tee nowadays. He's a bit ragged from the tee, isn't he?
He's a bit of an enigma, old Stuart, these days, isn't he? Because that was a really strange tournament for him last week. But yeah, he did make my list as well, Dave. But when I looked at his actual course form, I imagined it would be much better than that, because he plays quite well at places like Harbourtown, doesn't he? Has in the past, I think courses that you'd think are similar, but here, well, he's barely made the cut in three outings, so let him go, let him have a little run this week and we'll watch him.
Free lunch bet?
Oh, what have we got?
Henley versus Todd, do you fancy that?
Henley versus Todd. Not massively,
no.
I think we'll leave that this week.
Okay, that's fine.
My guys are very speculative other than that.
They are.
Henley hasn't got great course form. I think he'll either go really, really well or potentially, you know, at 40-1, I'm willing to wait that chance. But I don't think he's a surefire contender. He didn't play very well here last year. If he does catch fire this year, though, I think he'll win.
Yeah, let's wrap it up then. Now, start off with the ISPS Handa Perth International. Just the one bet here from the pair of us, Richard Green.
You know what, Dave? All these Australians will be staying up now till midnight waiting to hear the podcast. They won't be able to go to bed because we haven't released the podcast yet, and it starts in 8 or 9 hours.
It does. I'll have to get this out quickly.
Get it out, and they'll be sitting there waiting for it to land.
Richard Green.
Legions of followers.
50-1, Richard Green, a point each way in the Handa Perth International. The McGlatchy Classic, Mike, your three picks?
My three picks, three bold, strong picks. Russell Hendley, 40-1, a point each way. David Toms, the same, 80-1. And Andrea Looper, at some price, whatever Mark makes up.
Take a loop, million to one, won't
a
we?
A million to one, I think it is,
we'll
Dave.
Take a
yeah.
million to one.
I'll have half a point each way at millions.
Okay, I'll go with my two selections. Point each way, Brendan Todd at 33 to one. Half a point each way, Ken Duke at 200 to one. Player you don't want to win this week, Mike. It's got to be in the McGladrey, hasn't it?
For me, yeah, I would guess. Ooh, hard one. Harris English, maybe, because I thought he was going to be bigger than 25.
Yeah, I can see that. I'll go with Brian Harman as my man I don't want to win this week. I thought he was in the betting at 40 to 1. Brian Harman is the man I don't want to win. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter, folks, at D Kellner and at M Grenham. Also, check out Golf Twitter Tipster at Golf Twit Tipster as well. And we'll be back for more golf next week. Get your bets on by this evening for the Perth International. And, of course, we'll be in play on that event. And you've got a 12:30 start time in the McGladrey Classic at St. Simon's Island. So looking forward to that as well. Thank you for listening to the podcast, folks. And we'll be back again next week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.